it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
I'm good.
That Sunday feels going on over here.
Yes.
We are all over the place these days.
Yeah, it's been a busy day for me already. I went to the gym. Mm-hmm. I came home. I put myself together. I even curled my hair.
Wow.
Went to church. And now I'm going to talk with you about murder.
You've been from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah. Yeah, but church was good. It was a very good service.
Good. I'm glad. You look fresh.
Thanks.
Same cannot be said for me. You know, there's nothing that can put your life into perspective than when you open your computer and see yourself.
Like, one thing is looking in the mirror, and another thing is seeing yourself in a FaceTime or a Discord video.
That's exactly it. Because sometimes I feel like I always look bad, but I don't feel like I look as bad in the mirror. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I do know what it is, actually, because when you look in a mirror, you're looking at yourself two times as far away. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that's
why. Now you got
your
close up.
Yeah, when I learned to put on makeup, like, professionally, they would teach you to use a magnified mirror, because when you are close to people, they're seeing, like, you in a real light. But when you're looking in a mirror putting your makeup on, it's like you're looking at yourself two times far away. I know that doesn't make sense. I'm not articulating. But anyway, that's probably why I don't feel like I look that bad in there. Oh, Lord.
Well, good thing these people can't see us, okay?
Exactly. A face for the radio.
Uh-huh.
How's your new year going?
It's going pretty good. Yeah. Gave myself a mission statement, you know, just new goals.
No resolution?
Not really. You know, I don't really like resolutions just because it's like, I don't know. I like the mission statement thing where you just like, okay, this is who I want to be. And then you give yourself like little bullet points of how you're going to meet that goal.
That's good.
That's what I've done. Yeah.
I like that better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. That's a good approach. I was thinking, you know, we're a couple weeks into January now. I wonder how everybody's doing with their resolutions. Resolutions. Okay, well.
Did you have any resolutions this year? We haven't even talked about it.
No, I don't really, like you, I don't make resolutions really anymore. I used to. Mm-hmm. I used to be like, okay, this year I'm going to have a baby. You know, and then I never would.
Right. The plan never works out the way you think it's supposed to. Yeah.
I used to hate New Year's because it's the, you know, Christmas stuff is all gone and you feel like they're just Christmas tinsel tumbleweeds and it's really depressing. And also, like, going through infertility for so many years, you're like, this is our year. This is our year. But then another year closes and it's not your year. So I used to hate this time of year, but for some reason this year, I was so ready to put up all my decorations, get fresh, get organized. And I've been in this really like clean, tidy. I know it doesn't look like it, but I'm not representing myself very well, but I've just been in, I reorganized my office and it's making me feel really motivated to sew and like do projects that I need to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's just kind of the vibe I'm feeling right off the bat this year. It's like organization, tidy. And, you know, getting, like, bins and organizational stuff is really lighting me up.
Okay.
Stuff like that really gets my motor going.
Yeah. Got a pep in your step.
Yeah, exactly. I got a Bissell Crosswave.
Okay.
And so I'm really into like vacuuming / mopping my floors.
You sound like an adult right now.
I am an adult. Isn't that
what
sad?
What happened to us?
I know. When I got it, I was just like, I sent my mom a picture and I was like, this thing's amazing. And I was like, what have I become? These are the things I get excited about now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what I don't get excited about?
Mm.
Domestic violence. Yeah. Today's case, I'm just going to go right into it.
Yeah.
Here's a trigger warning for you. Domestic abuse trigger warning. There might be content that is very triggering for some people in this episode. So just know that going in. So, okay. Tanisha Devonna Stewart was born July 10th, 1987. I saw a different birthday for her, like an August birthday.
Oh.
But I was like, what? So, and okay. I like to think she was born the day after me. So let's just go with that one. Her father passed away when she was just 6 years old, sadly. So she was raised by her mother, Gail Shields. And when her mother remarried, her stepfather, of course, joined that equation. They lived in Aldine, which is an area in the greater Houston area in Texas. She was one of six children and didn't really grow up with much. I don't know how you afford anything with six kids. Three kids is about to send me down the tubes. But I saw a report that she actually received a college scholarship because she came from a low income household. So at least there is that for her. But she honestly grew up a really happy child. She clearly didn't exhibit any feelings of like her needs weren't being met or anything like that. She didn't act like she was lacking anything growing up. She was an honor student in high school, in the top 10% of her graduating class at Nimitz High School. Yeah, she was very active in school, involved in lots of extracurricular activities. She managed the basketball team and she worked part-time.
Wow.
Like all of that while working her way up in the top 10% of her class.
Good
job. I don't
know
how she did all that, but
she was a go-getter.
Yeah, she was. That's exactly it. Lane, are you reading my notes?
Maybe.
Yeah, that would be hard to pull off for most high school students, mm-hmm. but she was very disciplined, and if anyone was going to do all of that, it was going to be her. So after graduation, she attended Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas.
Gig-um.
Yep. And she was studying, get this, civil and chemical engineering. Like, what?
Yeah, that's
girl was smart.
Wow.
Smart. Her family said that she had a dogged determination to succeed. And if you consider her course of study was in a male-dominated field, she didn't care. She was going to do what she was going to do.
Yeah.
And she was going to succeed in life no matter what she was up against. So her friends lovingly described her as a drama queen. but it was really because she took everything so personally that she couldn't figure out. Like, she just wanted to make sense of things, and she kind of blew things out of proportion when she couldn't figure something out. And I think that comes back to her can-do / will-do attitude. So let's rewind just a little bit. Let's go back to high school really quick. When Tanisha was just 16, she met a guy named Timothy Shepherd while working at Pizza Hut. And they soon began dating. He was 24 at the time. Mm-hmm. They pretty soon got a place together while Tanisha was still in high school. And they lived together for a little bit. I couldn't find much information about this. I read this in one report that they had an apartment together, but I didn't find any more information about this. So maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But they lived together for a little bit before Tanisha went off to college. Their relationship was never really great from the start.
Oh, man.
They fought all the time. And Tanisha's family said that he was very possessive over her and jealous. Her family witnessed him put hands on her one time, and one time he wouldn't actually physically let her leave the apartment.
Oh, my goodness.
He did his best to cut her off from a lot of family and friends, which this is a huge red flag when it comes to domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
One time, Tanisha confided in her sister that Timothy had been violent with her, and he went so far as to choke her and threatened to kill her.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so she had expressed concern that she was scared of him. But her emotional investment in the relationship had pretty much fizzled out. And I'm not sure if there was an actual breakup, but she was going off to college and her studies were going to be demanding. And even though Houston and College Station are only about like an hour and a half away from each other, that distance does matter, especially when you're in school and you're busy. And in volatile relationships like this, breakups are often meaningless to the abuser. Mm. You know, you can say you're done. You can say you want out, and it goes in one ear and out the other, mm-hmm. basically. But even though she believed they were broken up, Tim still called her multiple times a day during her first semester there. And there was like a cooling off period where he kind of backed off a little bit. But it didn't last very long, and just months later, he was calling her multiple times a day again.
Hmm.
So, it was spring break 2007, and Tanisha had just returned home to Houston. She was actually really reluctant to go back home for spring break because she did not want to see Tim. She felt like he was going to find her, you know, wherever she was out with her friends. And she just didn't want to deal with that. I'm having flashbacks to a past relationship. I think you know the one, Lena.
Mm-hmm.
But she decided to go home anyway and see her mom and her friends because she knew she deserved that. You know, she wasn't going to let him come between her and her loved ones anymore. They weren't together. Mm-hmm. She's like, he's not going to do that to me anymore. I'm not going to live in fear, you know?
Yeah.
So on March 14th, 2007, Tanisha hung out with her friend Lois Greenwood at her apartment, at Lois's apartment, with a group of friends. And they all had plans to attend the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo the following day on the 15th. So Texan.
Mm-hmm.
Tim showed up at Lois's apartment to pick Tanisha up early on the morning of the 15th. And I'm sure her friends were giving her the side eye like, girl, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Tanisha said, you know, I'll be back later. Everything's fine. And she promised to be back in time for the stock show later that day. Her friend felt very uncomfortable. And even more so when she realized that Tanisha had left her cell phone behind.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't know why she left her cell phone at her friend's apartment, but if I could just, like, speculate for a moment, mm-hmm. I suspect, like, my first instinct is to say maybe she was scared that he'd either take it from her or look through it.
Oh. Or like, it wasn't...
Like, wanna see...
Like, she purposely left it, or it was just like a, oops, I...
Well, she could have innocently left it behind, sure.
Okay.
But knowing him, she might have been like, I'm going to leave it because he's probably going to look through it. He's going to be mad because she had moved on. She had started dating somebody else.
Okay, yeah. So I wouldn't want the opportunity for him to look at it either.
And... He could have gotten the other guy's phone number.
Oh. And,
I mean, I'm just like, I've been in a situation like that. So I just know how somebody like that might act, you know. But again, like you say, to your point, she could have just innocently left it behind. Who knows?
Yeah.
And we certainly don't know why she would have agreed to meet him.
Right.
When she was adamant that she didn't want to see him. Mm-hmm. Again, we can speculate as to why, because we know how domestic abuse works. We know there's always a pull. There's always something that draws you back in. Perhaps she agreed to have like one last conversation with him finally, right, and end things in a way that gave him the respect that he didn't deserve, you know, by looking him in the eye and saying, like, it's over, I've moved on. And another thing I thought about is, if they did live together and she did live at that apartment at one point, maybe there were some things she wanted to get back. You know, she had been off to college for months.
Okay.
Maybe she left something there and she just, I don't know. But for whatever reason,
yeah,
at some point since she had been home, they had been in contact and she willingly went with him that morning. So we know that she did willingly go with him. So they went back to his apartment, and around noon, she talked to her sister and let her sister know she was with Timothy. I'm not sure if she used his phone to call her or if, you know, what happened. But, oh my gosh, I cannot imagine what her sister must have been thinking. Like,
yeah,
oh, girl, what are you doing? She's probably rolling her eyes on the other end of the line. And but Tanisha's friends began to worry because she didn't show back up to Lois's apartment in time to get ready for the stock show.
No.
They thought, well, maybe she's, you know, spending time with him. Maybe he'll drop her off at the stock show.
Hmm.
They weren't sure because they couldn't get a hold of her. She had left her cell phone behind. When they didn't see her show up at the stock show, they really grew concerned.
Right.
And they ended up contacting Tanisha's family. They hadn't seen her, but her younger sister said, well, you know, I spoke with her and she was with Tim earlier. Hmm. And I'm sure all their hearts must have dropped in their buns.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure when I would break up with said person, my whole family was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, relief. You know?
But then when I see him again, y'all are like, oh, girl, come on. You were almost, you know, you almost were free of that. But that's how it works. There's always a hook. There's always a, you know,
maybe
a
it'll
draw.
Be different.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sure her family was feeling mixed emotions like, man, and like, I hope she's being careful.
Yeah.
Well, they contacted Tim and he said, well, I was with her earlier, but we had an argument and she left the apartment and haven't seen her since. Tanisha's family had been suspicious of Tim the minute they talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
So Lois, Tanisha's friend that she was with that day, and Tanisha's mother, Gail, went to Tim's apartment on March 19th. This was days later. Days had passed. But they didn't go alone. They took Sheriff's Deputy Wallace Wyatt with them. Now, Deputy Wyatt got the same story from Tim that he told her family. We were together. We fought. She left. Haven't seen her since. And he did consent to let them enter and look around his apartment. They saw a dirty interior with some areas on the walls that had clearly been freshly painted with white paint. But again, there didn't seem to be anything that indicated like any criminal activity or that he was hiding something. And I'm not sure at this time if her family also went into the apartment, but the officer did go look around. The next day, March 20th, Tanisha had been missing for 5 days by this point, and searches were well underway. And the communities in Houston really pulled together to look for their girl. Now, Texas EquiSearch was even involved at one point. They posted a bulletin that explained that Ty, Tanisha's nickname, was last seen leaving Tim's apartment on Red Oak. She was headed towards FM 1960, which is the information they got from Tim. She was wearing a black shirt and blue jeans, and they asked the community to be on the lookout for her, and come forward with any information that they may have regarding her whereabouts. They set up an HQ, for the search at Abiding Word Church, and they scheduled a meeting for search efforts that night, which was the 20th. Now, Sergeant Yvonne Cooper got wind that Tim was en route to the meeting. He hadn't been present for any of the other searches, and I think he was feeling like, oh, I better show my face. So she thought, I'm going to intercept him and do a little more digging, because these piddly little chats at the front door at the apartment, they just weren't it.
No.
They weren't getting any information. They needed to really ramp things up. So when Tim arrived at the church, she asked him to come into the station for questioning, and he agreed, but he did not agree to let them look at his apartment or car. He's like, no, I don't consent to that. So they got back to the station about 8:30 p.m. I love how they do this, like, late at night when someone's, like, already, you know, their energy level's, like, already fizzling out.
Yeah.
Sergeant Craig Clopton stepped into the interview room and took over to interview Tim. And it was only then that Tim ended up consenting to a search of his apartment and car. I wonder if it was because he was a man. Who knows? as Tim was repeating his story that, yeah, he was with Tanisha the day she presumed to have gone missing, they started arguing around 3 a.m. She stormed out of the apartment. She took her phone, and he didn't see her after that. Well, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We know she didn't have her phone.
Okay.
Sir.
Yeah.
So that's
get your story out. Straight.
So there's the first red flag that made detective's ears perk up.
Uh-huh.
You say she took her phone? Okay, well, we know that's a lie. And while he was sitting on his throne of lies in the interrogation room, Sergeant Cooper and two other detectives hightailed it over to Tim's apartment to do a thorough search, because as you know, he had given consent at that time. So they first took note of the freshly painted walls that had previously been seen. But detectives look at things like that and say, why are you painting your walls right now, sir?
Yeah.
The detective knows sussy. When you're trying to conceal something. Like, they look at things a little bit different. Like, your apartment is gross and dirty, but there are certain areas that have recently been cleaned with bleach and ammonia.
Mm.
Which is exactly what they found at Tim's. So they knew he wasn't a tidy person. He was clearly covering something up.
Yeah.
They also found little spots of blood on the light switch in the bathroom, an area on the side of the tub, and on the base of the toilet.
Interesting.
So in speaking with Tim's neighbors, their ears would soon perk up so high that they'd be on top of their heads. Because
oh, no.
James Herbert was very close with his neighbor, Tim. He said he did see Tanisha on the 15th go into Tim's apartment, but he never saw her after that. James also told investigators that Tim was acting really weird later that day, and in the days following, actually. Tim had two barbecue grills at his apartment on the balcony. One of those grills was Tim's, but the other belonged to James. And he kept it on Tim's balcony because they would grill together a lot.
Mm.
Like, it was just one of their things. They would always just grill out together. So I guess it just made more sense for him to, like, leave it at Tim's house.
Mm.
So he saw Tim grilling out that evening. And he thought, yo, he's out there grilling out without me. So Uh-oh. He shouts up. Tim's apartment was on the second floor. And he shouted up, hey, man, you gonna share or what? And Tim was like, oh, I'm catering a wedding, like, I'm cooking for all these people, so I can't share any of it. And James thought that was really weird, because he would always share, you know, like, no matter what he was making. Another neighbor of Tim's would later tell Channel 11 News that he noticed Tim's suspicious behavior, too. And he smelled something really, really awful coming from his second floor balcony, where he appeared to be burning something foul on those barbecue grills. Other neighbors noticed it too. And it was cold outside. And the neighbors were like, why does he have all his windows open? All the lights on? Like, throughout the night. You know how in March it can get chilly in Texas.
Uh-huh.
So he had all his lights on. He had all the fans on in the apartment. And again, all the windows were open. Day and night. So people thought that was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
So the search for Tanisha continued. The community really pulled together during this time. And there was a community activist named Quanel X. I believe it's pronounced Farrakhan.
Hmm.
Quanel X Farrakhan. I hope I'm saying that right. He went by Quanel X. He got involved in the search for Tanisha. He was the leader of the Black Panther Party in Houston and the New Black Muslim Movement. And his role in the community really allowed him to act as somewhat of a buffer between the Black community and the police, which I think is amazing. You see the climate we're in today, where there is a very clear distrust of law enforcement by the African American community. That situation has been the case for a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Quanell received a phone call from Tim asking him if he could meet with him. And he didn't know Tim, but by this time he knew Tim to be the last person seen with Tanisha. So he thought, well, I'll aid in any way that I can to see if we can find Tanisha. So he advised Tim to take him to his apartment where they could speak privately, where they weren't being eavesdropped on by police or even like have them tapped, because at that point they were, you know, around search parties and everything, and they thought, well, it's just not safe here. So Quanell and Tim talked, and Tim expressed concern that police were looking at him in connection with Tanisha's disappearance. But then Tim's behavior kind of shifted. So they were at Tim's apartment. They're standing near Tim's bathroom, and he starts fidgeting and like really just wanting to get out of there as far away as he could. So they went outside and kind of walked around the apartment complex to talk. Quanell said, look, man, are you sure you don't know anything? What do you know?
You're acting suspicious.
Yeah, he was like, you need to just tell me. Come clean, you know, let your conscience go. So Tim starts crying, and he's expressing his concern for what might happen to him if he goes to police. Not because he was scared of being accused of something he didn't do, like Quanell probably initially thought, but he was scared of getting the death penalty for something he did do. After a little more conversation, he told Quanell he'd killed Tanisha. Tim said that he and Tanisha did have an argument that night, but she didn't leave the apartment like he'd initially told them. He said they argued because she began dating someone else, and he alleged that she came at him with a knife. So he grabbed it from her and choked her to death. He then transported her body in a plastic tote and dumped her in a dumpster. Quanell is sitting there like, okay, I'm going to get you to talk with my attorney. And so he pulls out his phone and he calls up his attorney, Stanley Schneider. And after that conversation with Quanell's attorney, Tim felt comfortable going to the police and said that he'd take them to Tanisha's body. So Quanell rang the sheriff's department so they could come with them to recover Tanisha's body. And Sergeant Miller from the Harris County Sheriff's Department met them at Tim's apartment to go over to, like, follow him wherever he was going to take them. They drove to a nearby apartment complex, kind of wove around all the buildings all the way to the back, where there was a set of dumpsters. But upon further investigation, they found no evidence that he was telling them the truth. There was no body, no plastic tote, no blood, no evidence that a body had ever been there. And it appeared that the trash had been collected by that point. So presumably there wouldn't have been anything there to find.
Right.
Unless, like, there was a blood or anything on the trash can itself. So they asked him, is this where you placed her body? And he said yes. So they placed him under arrest right there at the scene and took him back to the station. Now, they booked Tim and they took his clothes, you know, how they do, photographing his hands. There was a small cut on one of his hands. And he was allowed to speak briefly with Quanell's attorney, Stan Schneider. But police didn't give them much time because apparently there was a conflict of interest there, because this was Quanell's attorney, not Tim's attorney. Okay. And I don't know the details about that, but they almost didn't let him talk to Stan before he was questioned, but they did give him some time. So Tim did give a formal statement. He confessed to the murder of Tanisha Stewart and they obtained a search warrant for his apartment again. This time, they had a better idea of what they were looking for. Because Tim's confession and all the interviews with the neighbors, investigators had this different theory of events. Because they didn't believe what he was saying about the murder, about him dumping her body in the... They didn't believe that. They actually believed that after that argument, there was no knife drawn on him.
Right.
He was jealous. He was a controlling ex-boyfriend who attacked Tanisha in a fit of rage because she had the nerve to move on to a new relationship. So, they believed he did choke her to death, but they didn't buy that he just dumped her in a dumpster. They actually believed he burned her remains.
Oh my gosh.
I know. When Harris County Sheriff Tommy Thomas announced the arrest of Timothy Shepherd and that their search for Tanisha would be suspended, her family and community were, of course, pleased about the arrest, but outraged to hear that they were no longer looking for her body. Like, why? They didn't tell the family that they found a body. In fact, they told her family they didn't find a body. So the department was given a substantial financial resource to the tune of $500,000 to conduct a full-scale search for Tanisha's body. But that fund would never be tapped into, and that full-scale search would never take place because they knew there was no body to recover. I think this was something they did to save face or appease the community and the family. But the family didn't know what police knew at the time. They didn't know that police had mounting circumstantial evidence to suggest that Tanisha never left that apartment that night. Like, never left. Never left.
No.
They didn't know that there wasn't a body to search for or recover. Police couldn't tell the family at that very moment because they were building an investigation. You know, sometimes police withhold certain information, even from the family, if it benefits the case.
Right, right.
Right. They did end up telling the family because they were owed that. I'm not sure if that was, like, right before trial or if it was a while before trial, but they did end up disclosing that information to the family. Lead prosecutor Marie Prim, during the trial, explained to the jury that Tim was a cold-blooded killer who had not one single second of remorse for what he did. She showed the jury Tim's videotaped confession, which really started things off pretty strong, if you, like, right out of the gate, if you think about it. We've got this guy on tape confessing to the murder. So she also told the jury that she can prove how unbothered he was. Mm. And she shared one of the jailhouse phone calls. He was laughing with a friend saying, "The is going to make me money from the grave.
Okay.
I'll just write a book about it."
Wow.
Additionally, Quanell testifies about how when Tim confessed to Tanisha's murder, he appeared to show no remorse for what he did. Instead, he was far more concerned with what punishment he would receive. He thought, "I'm going to get the death penalty," you know, and he was more worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
Also on the stand, a Ponderosa Fire Department volunteer firefighter, Robert Logan, and Deputy Russell with the Harris County Sheriff's Department, they both testified that they responded to a 911 call at Tim's apartment on March 16th, the day after she went missing. The caller reported flames and smoke in the apartment below him. But when the firefighter and the police officer arrived, they didn't see any fire. They went and knocked on Tim's door, and they were like, "Is there a fire going on in here?" And he's like, "No. There's no fire."
Oh my gosh.
And he quite nervously stood there at the door and ended up letting them in to look around. Lena, just hang on. Just, you're going to get such a visual of what was in that apartment.
Oh my gosh. And
it's going to send chills down your spine. So they walked in. They noted three small burned chickens on the stove.
What?
One of those chickens appeared to still be smoking. So they were like, oh, okay, you're just like a really bad cook in here.
They oh my Lord.
Made their way through the rest of the apartment. And when they got to the bathroom, they saw a bathtub full of bloody water.
No.
Chickens floating in the tub.
It's along not with chicken. Some other
meat and a rack of ribs.
No.
So while they're thinking this guy is really weird, they didn't see anything that struck them as amiss. Yeah. I wish people could see your face right now.
Oh, my Lord.
So the officer later said on the stand that in this community, it's really common for residents to cook huge meals, you know, because they have big families, they're cooking for the community, and it's not unusual to, like, cook these big meals. So they just thought, well, they had that information from the neighbor that said, oh, he's cooking for a wedding, and so it just all seemed like legit.
Well, okay, but there it's a firefighter that goes in and a police officer.
Yes.
Like, they know what death smells like, they know what death looks like.
Right.
They know what human body looks like.
Right.
What?
And chicken? Can I also say that a human rack of ribs looks much different from a beef or pork ribs.
Beef ribs. Oh my God.
Lena, they left that apartment. They're like, bye. Okay, nothing to see here.
Yeah, we checked it out. It's all good.
My jaw is on the floor and I wrote these notes.
Yeah.
But I have this visual. It's such a disturbing visual to know that they entered that apartment the day after she went missing and looked around and left that apartment.
Wow. If I were them, after knowing that she's murdered and he grilled her remains.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be able to handle myself if that were me.
Exactly. Now, even with the confession given by Tim, the burden of proof was on the shoulders of the prosecution, as we know. And yeah, they had the confession, but that doesn't prove anything, right? What evidence do they actually have? An investigator for the Harris County Sheriff's Office said that there was no body parts to recover. They did, however, find charred fragments of bone and hair in the apartment, but sadly they were so badly burned that there was no like full DNA profile that they could get to identify the victim.
My goodness.
Now, they were able to test some blood on a pair of jeans found in Tim's apartment, and DNA analysis Nikki Redman confirmed that the blood was a match for Tim, and Tanisha could not be excluded from the sample. So they had that mix, and apparently they just couldn't get a full profile from that. Additionally, those bone fragments, and there was also pieces of enamel that were recovered from his garbage disposal.
Oh, Jesus.
Though those items were pretty much unusable, Tanisha could not be excluded from those pieces of bone fragment. But Tim could be excluded. So if you think about it, wasn't any of Tim's like teeth or hair or anything like that in there. But they couldn't exclude her. So while they didn't have a full profile, they did have that. Now, Dr. Jennifer Love was called to testify about tool marks found on the bone fragments recovered from Tim's patio. She said, she opined, I love that word. Joseph Scott Morgan uses that word, and I'm just like, yes. So she said she opined that the bone had been cut with a saw, some type of saw, near the time of death. Then it was burned, and that particular remnant was consistent with a human forearm. So they didn't have much concrete evidence, but they had enough you know, combined with the circumstantial evidence. And the jury was handed the case, and with everything taken together, they considered everything, and they found him guilty of murder. Mm. Yay.
Yes.
Now, in the sentencing phase, Tim took the stand.
Okay. Let's hear what he has to say.
Exactly. He explained that he and Tanisha got into an argument about her new boyfriend, Mark, and he just snapped, and he strangled her until she stopped breathing. He said he freaked out, and he needed to cover his tracks. And it was at the sentencing phase where he kind of laid it all out there and confirmed everything that investigators thought this whole time. So he kind of ditched the whole, I threw her body in a dumpster.
Right.
He says he freaks out. He went to a nearby hardware store where he bought a jigsaw so that he could dismember her. And he used some tools that he had back at his apartment as well. He took off all her clothes. He placed her in the bathtub. And he started to dismember her with this jigsaw. He said, I didn't have a strategy. I just started to cut.
Oh, my gosh. Well, here it goes. I mean...
Exactly. He used pliers to pull all of her teeth out so her remains couldn't be identified through dental records. God.
He really thought about this.
This is chilling to me because, like, we see this a lot when people murder someone and then dismember them. They're like... Well, I just panicked and I needed to get... No, you got in the car, you drove right to the hardware store, you were probably stopped at red lights, stop signs on the way, so you're thinking of this guy. He's just in his car, just killed his girlfriend, he's driving to the hardware store, stops at a red light, he's got time to think about this, proceeds, parks his car, goes in the hardware store, searches... Oh, can't find the jigsaw. Excuse me, sir. Can you show me where the jigsaws are? If he, and then he stands in line, purchases this jigsaw. All this time it takes to carry out what you're about to do, and every step of the way, you have the wherewithal, the forethought to proceed. Then you go home, and you dismember her entire body.
Right.
Pull out her
teeth.
At any point
while you're sawing away, you can say... This is wrong.
I can't even. I cannot put my mind there. Mm-mm. He stated that he burned all of their clothes and what body parts he could burn. And then he placed the rest of the body parts in a plastic tub and put it in the dumpster. He like slid it all the way down the stairs and then dumped it.
Mm-hmm.
He says that he then went to eat dinner with a neighbor.
Huh.
So that just in case the cops ever talked to his neighbor mm-hmm. would be like, yeah, I was with him that night and he was totally cool. Yeah, we had dinner. He's totally fine. Everything's cool.
Oh my gosh.
Well, the jury didn't think he was cool. And he was sentenced to 99 years in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice.
Bye.
So, bye now.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Oh,
thank
wait,
you, jury.
Not bye? He appealed. This
no.
This always makes me roll my eyes, like, or, especially in a case like this where there's like he has laid it all out.
Yeah.
You know, everything.
Uh-huh.
Like, just sit down and take your punishment, please.
But at the same time, I know lawyers are like, I mean, they want to keep getting money, so they're
true.
You should appeal.
Yeah.
And keep
exactly.
them on the payroll.
Well, his points in the appeal were that evidence was seized before a search warrant was issued. That was false. Also, he alleged that the jury was not instructed on the self-defense claim about Tanisha coming at him with a knife before he killed her, which means that the court did not explain to the jury what the points for self-defense were. Like, there's a whole slew of, like, legal things that qualify as self-defense. Like, you have the right to defend yourself and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And he's saying the jury was never informed of the definition of self-defense.
Oh, my
well,
gosh.
Well, the court denied the self-defense jury charge.
It doesn't
charge.
Matter.
Anyway,
you
exactly.
murdered her and
well,
you cut her up.
They had denied that anyway. So they were found to not be in violation of anything there. And by denied that, I mean they were denied that motion before trial or during the trial. So
okay,
that's stupid argument. He tried to poo-poo Dr. Love's credentials the tool mark expert. And he also claimed that his Miranda rights were violated, and all that was shut down too. So he is going to spend the rest of his life in prison where he belongs.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to end on a couple things about Tanisha. They held a memorial service for her at the Nimitz High School where she graduated just a year before she died. Over 1,000 people gathered to remember her, and they gathered to remember not how she was taken, but how she lived and the lasting impression that she left on those around her. As friends, family, former teachers, etc. gathered, of course there were tears, but they also laughed a lot because they were reflecting on her electrifying presence. She was just one of those people that would not go unnoticed. You know, people say, oh, she lit up a room when she walked in.
Right.
Tanisha walked into a room and she lit it up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She electrified that room. People knew she had arrived.
Aww.
And her coach, the coach of the basketball team at her high school, recounted how Tanisha had managed the team, and she said, Tanisha, you know, all your siblings are very athletic and they play, so why don't you actually want to play on the team? And she said, oh no, coach, I don't like to sweat. And Tanisha, I feel you. I don't either. Yeah.
That's my sister-in-law too.
Exactly. Now, Tanisha's sister, Gayla Stewart Taylor, set up the Tanisha Stewart Foundation, Keeping Secrets, and it's spelled K-E-Y-P-I-N-G, keeping, like a lock and key.
Right.
In a Facebook post, she wrote, "We want to tell firsthand our experience about what my sister and family went through with domestic violence. In doing this, we hope that others will see keeping domestic violence a secret can be very deadly. Mm-hmm. Also, we want to provide them with information regarding transitional housing and link them with emergency rent, gas cards, clothing, food, and emotional stability. Our mission is to get women and young girls to speak out about being in an abusive relationship in hopes that this can save many women and young girls from going through what my sister and family went through. Together, we can take a stand and stop domestic violence." And I will link the Facebook page in the show notes. Go give them a like and see if there's anything you can do to help the foundation.
Yeah.
Or just spread awareness about the foundation. And if you yourself are experiencing domestic violence or the makings of domestic violence, because you don't have to be experiencing the physical violence to be experiencing domestic abuse, there is help for you. So we have shared these resources before. I think you did an episode about this, but here they are again. You can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-SAFE. That's 800-799-7233, or you can text START to 88788. You can also visit their website, www.thehotline.org, for more information on resources in your area, and I will also link that in the show notes as well. And this website has a section on how to identify abuse. I mentioned earlier that, you know, physical violence isn't the only way to qualify unacceptable intimate partner behavior as abuse. So you can look for red flags there. And I know it's always tough to do these kind of stories because we're not just talking about a murder that happened. We're talking about something that affects so many people worldwide.
Right.
And so for some, it's really hard to break free from those cycles. But I hope this episode provided you with some perspective or new information. And if you find yourself in the same situation, you can hopefully get help. So that is the story of Tanisha Stewart.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Rest in peace, Tanisha. And thank you for sharing those resources again. It's always good to be reminded. And always be aware of the warning signs, and it's no joke.
Warning signs are huge. I don't know if you guys have watched the show Made.
No.
Have you watched that?
I haven't heard of it.
It's about, it's kind of like about how screwed up the system is in helping women get out of domestic situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because she goes to a resource center, I think it is, with her small child. And they're like, well, has he hit you? And she's like, well, no. But he's like punching the wall right next to my head. And they're like, well, come back when he's hit you or something.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a crime has to be committed. And a lot of people think, oh, well, he hasn't hit me. But he does throw plates across the room. Or he does slam doors in my face. Or he did, you know, push me down once. So it's really important to know those warning signs.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, if someone's not being nice to you, screw them.
Yeah, you don't have
just
to.
Just in general.
Yeah, so. You don't have to stay. You don't have to be nice to them or to make them feel better. Just leave.
So that was great. We should do it again sometime.
Yeah, let's do it.
Not that, though. But maybe something similar. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.